The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey there, classmates. Tune in to Middle Class Film Class every Monday and Wednesday for weekly movie news, streaming picks, and one deep dive review.
The Batman trailer. There was a teaser. There was a trailer. Trailer 1, trailer 2, final trailer. I don't know if it's the same one. How many trailers do we need?
Exactly.
Leave an email or a voicemail to join in the discussion.
Bullshit artist!
Yeah, buddy.
All right. You're going full Danzig.
Right, I am. My trans gear
has no power over me.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 363, the very first episode of the PVD Cast for 2023. And speaking of the holidays, I hope yours was great. I hope that you had plenty of time to spend with your friends and your family. I hope that you got some great presents. I hope you had a good time. I hope that your New Year's was happy. I could go on and on. I'm very excited that it is 2023. I feel like I'm refreshed, if you will, from taking a couple of weeks off. And you know what? My holidays were pretty good. As a matter of fact, I flew up to Rhode Island to visit mom and my stepfather. And getting up there was a little bit treacherous because here in Ohio on Christmas Eve, on that day, we had a lot of snow and ice, so getting to the airport took a little longer, but the flight went smooth, and remarkably, the flight went smooth on the way back. I did not have any issues whatsoever. I did fly Southwest Air, and you know, I was watching the news the week after Christmas, seeing all the delays and feeling terrible for all those people who had their holidays impacted in such a negative way. And then we had more issues. I don't know, what is it with America and our airlines? What the hell? I mean, it almost makes you not want to fly, but flying up to Rhode Island in 6 hours is a lot better than driving it and it take 12. So, but nonetheless, I'm back. I'm ready to go. I'm excited for this episode. I have an individual that is coming on that just a few short months, about 8 months ago, he made his first appearance on the PVD Cast, and I'll tell you the story as to why he's returning, but I'm talking about a filmmaker from New York named Cody Clark, and Cody was on episode 328 in April of 2022, and we talked about his film projects, but off air, he made a comment about, you know, I see that you like wrestling. I love wrestling. I'd love to chat about it. And I made him a promise right then and there. I said, dude, I will have you on in a few months, maybe towards the tail end of the year, and we'll talk wrestling. Because if you say you want to talk wrestling, I'm willing to oblige you because I love to talk about that topic. And so it took us a little bit of time to get things scheduled, but we finally did manage to get our schedules to sync up, if you will. And so Cody came and sat down and chatted with me. And I was really interested when you're going to hear Cody start talking about the technical aspects of wrestling, like how you should shoot a wrestling show and like some of the comparisons and some of the things that happen in filmmaking that also happen in pro wrestling. And I thought it's really insightful. And so, you know, you got that to look forward to, as well as you're going to hear about his favorites, how his fandom started, heck, even his thoughts on AEW and a whole lot more. So let's not waste any time. Let me plug my great sponsor, World's Greatest Comics. You know that they've been with me for a long time, and I really do appreciate it. Their support means a lot to me. And if you're unfamiliar with the store and you live in Central Ohio, well, shame on you. Fix that. swing on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But I know some of you are probably listening outside of Columbus, and you say, John, I'd like to check it out, but I'm not driving all that way to Westerville. And I understand that. That's fine. You can check out the store through their website, wgcomics.com, or better yet, find them on Facebook at WG Comics, as they're very active on that Facebook page, and you could check out the store and interact with the folks there at World's Greatest Comics. And once again, I gotta say thank you so very much to Jeff and all the fine folks down there for being a great sponsor of the PVD cast. And folks, go buy some comics from Jeff, all right? All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Cody Clark. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I am sitting down this evening with Mr. Cody Clark, the man behind Kill the Lion Films. Cody, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to talk about wrestling.
That's right. We're not going to talk about film just yet. We're going to talk a little bit about it, but this episode is going to be wrestling heavy because as you were on, I believe in April, if I remember correctly, of 2022, as we wrapped up, you had mentioned that you are a massive wrestling fan, so I had to have you come back on and talk about your fandom and talk about this awesome industry of professional wrestling.
Yes, I'm very glad to talk about wrestling. I don't get enough of an opportunity to do so because I don't have too many friends that are really into wrestling, so I'm very excited.
All right. Well, let's start off. When did this fandom of wrestling start?
Probably when I was in middle school, which would have been, I guess, late 90s, early 2000s. You know, that's, you get into it just because friends are into it and classmates are into it. You don't get into it seriously, or at least I don't. I don't really understand the philosophy of it. I just understand it as entertainment. I understand it as something on TV, just like South Park or The Simpsons or something like that. You know, I'm not really exploring it as an art form. It's just content that you watch, and you watch in order to know what the hell anybody else in school is talking about. So that was what I enjoyed it as, just pure entertainment, something that was on TV. And I didn't watch heavily. I just watched enough to know who the main characters, the biggest wrestlers were. I didn't watch any pay-per-views because that was too expensive. I just watched, you know, what was on TV. And I fell off with it because I didn't build that solid connection. Like, for me to really care about an art form or a subgenre or anything, like, I need to, like, key into it on a philosophical level almost, where I just need to get why it exists on some existential level even. So I didn't really appreciate wrestling on a deep level until, I would say, 2014. And I started watching just casually, just episodes of Raw or SmackDown, just, you know, dipping the toes in the water. It didn't really take, you know, it didn't really like grab me until I think it would have been like 2015. You're probably better with the dates, but I kind of like, I made like a Facebook post and I was like, all right, what are the good wrestling matches that I missed like recently or in the last couple of years or whatever that's going to like really like wow me. And a friend of mine told me I needed to watch the NXT that had recently happened with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, that match in particular. And so I watched that match and I was blown away. So NXT is what brought me back into wrestling. Oh. And I think for a lot of people too, that kind of like 2015, because NXT went on an incredible run as far as really high quality wrestling and television that streak was amazing up until like 2.0 when it kind of like fell off a little bit. But that was an amazing run. And so if it wasn't for NXT, I don't think I would have keyed back into wrestling. And since keying back into it through NXT, I have such an appreciation for it as an art form and just an amazing synthesis of so many different styles of of art that I appreciate, from theater to performance art to even soap opera, even, you know, everything you can throw at it. Wrestling kind of is an amalgam of it all, and synthesize it into something that's extremely hard, way harder than anything I do as a filmmaker. And I'm just humbled when I watch wrestling. That's how I could put it.
You know what? You took the question that I was going to ask right off the page, so to speak, because I was going to ask you, you know, you talk about it being an art form and dealing in the arts as a filmmaker. I was going to ask if you saw a lot of crossover between that, because I feel like in wrestling, when you boil it all down, it is a narrative, a story that you are telling. And I just wondered, I assume that you probably picked up on that.
Yeah, I think wrestling is it's a narrative for sure, but it's a narrative in a hyper real way, almost like politics is a narrative in a hyper real way. So it's supplanting itself over our reality and following our reality to the point where, like, if you're of a certain age, you can trace your entire life along with WrestleMania existing. You know, maybe you were born when WrestleMania 1, you know, came out, and you can kind of chart your life much in the way that people of a certain age could chart their life based off of Super Bowls. You know, my dad can probably chart his life based off Super Bowls. So it's this, I think film doesn't have that as much. There's certain films that you can kind of benchmark your life with, but wrestling and sports can you really can measure, you know, where you were at a particular time with a shorthand of, oh, that was, oh, WrestleMania 20, I remember, blah, blah, blah. That's an amazing thing. Now, I wasn't fully able to do that with wrestling because I wasn't watching the pay-per-views. I was just watching casually when I was a kid. But once I got back into it in like 2014, 2015, being able to go on the WWE Network and watch those pay-per-views for a song, you know, like it was so cheap compared to what it was when I was much younger. It was so cost-effective to just have that network subscription and just be able to watch every new pay-per-view that came out. You know, I was deprived of some of the better matches as a kid. And now, you know, as a grown-up, I was able to see, you know, whatever the best matches of the year usually were. You build this like parallel life along with whatever content is being pushed out in the wrestling arena. So that's something I appreciated like in a big way. And as a filmmaker, you know, that's not something I get to be a part of. Like I can make movies, but I can't necessarily create a parallel timeline for my audience. They might be able to be like, oh yeah, I remember when Shredder came out or Ramekin came out or No Shark came out, but I'm never going to penetrate on that level of wrestling because of the soap opera aspect and the almost political aspect of like remembering like what the 2000 election was like or the 2004 election or whatever. And just kind of like you're growing alongside something. And so wrestling, you grow alongside, even though it's fantasy, it's fiction, it's spectacle. And that's something that like I'm jealous of in a certain way, but I'm also glad I don't have the burden of as a filmmaker. I'm glad that each one of my films can almost be kind of like a wormhole that just opens up for a particular time and then, you know, maybe is revisited later, but doesn't really grow alongside people. So it's a lot of responsibility, and I have so much respect for those in that industry that have to create in that way.
When you first got the WWE Network, did you ever go back and watch some of the older stuff, like the WCW from maybe like 1989 or the AWA from 1987 or anything like that? Did you go down those kind of, I'm going to use your term, wormhole, so to speak, and learn about some of the past great matches?
Yeah, I definitely watched the Halloween Havoc with Mysterio, and I watched certain things that I always heard were like key matches or are just so ubiquitously key that like I need to watch them or whatever. But also just like, you know, if Royal Rumble was rolling around, maybe I'd go and watch a couple Rumbles from the past just to, you know, have something to compare it to. Because I think also when I started watching again, like 2015, everything was exciting to me. Once you key into it, everything is great. So like you watch a pay-per-view and you're like, that was amazing. And then you go on like Reddit or something and people are like, it was okay. And I'm just like, well, I don't have as much to compare it to. So I'm just like a kid and I'm just like, it was great. A plus, you know? Yeah. And in a way, wrestling is kind of always A plus or F. Like, let's be honest, like it either kind of, if you're keyed into it properly, what you're watching is so hard. And so it just takes so much skill to put on a compelling wrestling match that if you even pull it off, it's kind of pass fail. It's just like, oh my God, that was amazing. Or I wasn't keyed into it. It was awful. So like grading matches like A plus, B minus, whatever, it's kind of like for the birds. But yeah, I still kind of do that with pay-per-views where I'll like evaluate them like afterwards in that kind of like anal way. But but yeah, I went back to some old stuff, mostly, like I said, coinciding with like whatever pay-per-views come out. I'll just like check out some of the old ones or key matches from some of the old ones. I definitely have an appreciation for the aesthetic of the Attitude Era, just because it does bring me back like almost instantly to a production value that I miss. Not necessarily a time period that I miss, but there's something about the look of it. Like, the thing I don't like as a filmmaker of wrestling now, and this goes for, you know, AEW, WWE, NXT, like anything aside from maybe like New Japan. I don't like a lot of the cuts. I think it undercuts the move being done, or rather it covers up too much for the move. I know this gets associated with Kevin Dunn a lot, or
yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah, but it seeps into everything. I think it's more pervasive than people maybe even realize, because it's happening on a less obvious level pretty much everywhere, because it's just how you shoot things. And it's due to a technical limitations that even though the cameras are better, there's certain things you can't do with them that you were able to do with the kind of cameras that were being used during the Attitude Era. That's just, I mean, that's a nerdy technical approach to the problem. It's not as exciting an answer as just like, oh, Kevin Dunn sucks. But there's just things I miss about the way wrestling was shot that I think was a better way to shoot it on a technical level that you could still do today. It's just nobody's going to put in the infrastructure. I would compare it to shooting movies on film versus shooting movies digitally. You know, it's always going to be a little bit better on film, but it's never going to be more cost effective or feasible. And in a certain way, the standard def video 90s approach is the equivalent of film here, and the high def approach and the quick cuts, it goes alongside each other. You can't really separate the two just because of how the cameras behave. And I think that's a disappointing aspect, but it's also great that you can always go back to the library and kind of compare and see what's done better. Like the vastness of the wrestling library is just incredible. Even though it's on Peacock now, it's still one of the best deals possible month to month.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I'll be honest, I thought you were going to go a different avenue with that discussion of how it was shot, because I was thinking, for me, I always appreciated the old grittiness of some of those older promotions. You know, it wasn't slickly produced. It wasn't, you know, a lot of cuts. It was down and dirty, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, I think of my fandom for ECW. That was something that I appreciated, was that bingo hall was... it was a shithole, let's be honest. And the way that they shot it fit what they were doing. And so I thought you were going to go that avenue in terms of more like along the lines of, instead of being the technical aspect of things, but more of the, I don't know, would you say the setting and tone maybe would be the way I was thinking about it, the tone of the show?
I mean, I love the ECW stuff as well. ECW is fantastic. I have so much respect for Paul Heyman. I think Paul Heyman is even though he's beloved, he's gonna forever be underrated until hopefully he passes in like 20, 40, 50 years from now. But like when he's gone, I think he's just gonna shoot up as far as appreciation, even though he's very well appreciated right now. He's done so much and has been able to do things that are just unheard of as far as morphing yourself to stay relevant with the product, just in ways that are just absolutely brilliant. His persona now is just genius, and his yes. persona has always been genius, even when he was just kind of doing podunk stuff. Like, he's just a brilliant mind in wrestling. So the ECW stuff I love. I do love like the crappy, gritty, just let's just record it and get it done kind of aspect. But that is kind of, you know, almost like punk rock music or hardcore. You know, that's part of the magic and the magic trick that you're performing. You're hiding the aesthetic choices. You're covering the seams with, oh, we're just stitching this together and we don't really care. We just want to show you great wrestling, and maybe we don't have the biggest budget. Like, you're still doing as much work as the big guys in a sense. You're just able to kind of hide it. Almost like if you have a lot of distortion on your guitar, you can hide your lack of guitar playing a bit better because it all kind of blends together. I think when you have a rougher aesthetic with the product that you're depicting when it comes to wrestling, you can hide a lot of the seams a lot better. And as your production value grows, as whether you're making an album or you're producing a wrestling pay-per-view or whatever, as that production value grows, the seams are naturally going to be more visible just because everything's a bit clearer. I think part of what you're keying into as better with the older stuff, particularly the ECW stuff, is that, you know, even though it's quote unquote looks worse, it's a more cohesive aesthetic, much like a Ramones album is going to be something more cohesive than like a Taylor Swift album, which is very choppy and very pieced together. A Ramones song just feels like an entity that just the entire song just exists. Like, I Want to Be Sedated front to end just exists. It's just this organism. So the ECW stuff is like this organism where you can't even separate itself from itself. It's just like a blob that just drops onto your lap. And it's incredible in that way, for sure.
Who were some of your favorites to watch in the ring?
It's so funny because like, I love everybody that like is cool to love, like for sure. Like, you know, that's all great. But I find faces and I find people that maybe aren't as appreciated, but as a filmmaker, like if I'm casting somebody in something, I'm looking for star quality on a level that an audience member might not be looking for. You know, so when I saw Becky Lynch, like before she became the man, before she became anything, in her eyes, I saw everything that she would become. I saw that special quality to her that would get tapped into. Right now, I see that in Raquel Rodriguez. I see she has this face that's almost Disney animation, like her big mouth and her expressions. And that paired with a physicality that's very unusual for female wrestlers, it's a bit stronger and a bit leaner, and is just a physicality that you don't see much. Just the way that her body is built, combined with her very expressive face, Raquel Rodriguez, like put your money in her. Like if you're investing in people that are going to be so huge, she is. You know, barring injury, barring like all the politics of wrestling, whatever, she is going to soar. So like, I look for people to root for in that regard, you know? So like, you know, I love MJF and I love people that are kind of already established as, you know, they're doing great work, but I'm looking for who's kind of hiding in plain sight for a little bit. I spotted that in Dexter Loomis. The moment I laid eyes on him, I was like, he would be great, with The Miz or in NXT or whatever. He could do it all. You just see something in somebody, and I don't know if I can teach that, and I don't know if I can explain that, but like, because I'm in the business of mostly casting, like most of filmmaking, if you cast it well, the movie makes itself. So I have a heightened sense for casting. So I'll key into people that other people won't. And I'm not always right, but yeah, I would say I'm usually right as far as somebody's potential.
So what's your opinion on the current state of pro wrestling? You know, we have WWE, we have AEW who are competing for viewers and whatnot. And I've seen that a lot of people have some very strong opinions on both sides of that equation. So what's your thoughts on the WWE versus AEW, for lack of a better term?
Well, I think people that are into AEW, I think they vastly overrate how one might key into the product because they like it so much. So like, I think AEW is hard to get into for the uninitiated, and WWE is a lot easier. Like, there's more of a railing for WWE. You can hold on to more as you're getting into it. I think AEW, it's almost like you're walking in on an inside joke that you're not fully a part of, and you're just kind of like hanging around the edge of the room, just kind of like waiting for a moment to like feel a part of whatever's going on. And you know, this isn't like profound to say, but obviously it's more like smart mark oriented as far as a product, and WWE is more like kids can get into it, all the way to, you know, adults or even elderly people that haven't watched wrestling in a while. Like, it's more like Monopoly. It's like just a game that you can just, everybody in the household can essentially kind of play, because everybody can roll a dice and just kind of move around. So AEW, I think it's suffering right now in ways that are unnoticed by fanboys of the product, and it's still finding itself. It will find itself for many years, just because that's how long it probably takes. You know, it probably takes a certain amount of years just to get into a real groove. I'm rooting for it, but I would say, as somebody watching things, I don't feel as compelled to watch AEW, just because in the back of my mind constantly as I'm watching it, I don't feel like it is what it's going to be yet. And it's a lot of stuff to watch before it's ready. Like, for me to watch, you know, 5-6 hours of television a week, and it's something that I don't feel is really coalesced into itself yet, that's a big ask. And
So
I'll watch, you know, I'll fast forward through a bunch of Raw or SmackDown. I'm not sitting down watching that much of WWE. My favorite thing was NXT. I watched NXT every week. That was the only thing I really watched religiously. And then when it went to 2.0 and kind of shifted gears, I fell out with it. It was too diametrically opposite to everything that I enjoyed about it. So I don't watch stuff religiously. I watch stuff enough to stay abreast of what's going on, but I feel way less of an impulse to stay abreast of AEW, just because as good as a lot of the people in it are, like, you know, Darby Allin would be a star anywhere, any era, anywhere. He's just like, he would be so cool in Sting era. He would be so cool in like early 2000s. He would be so cool now. He's just, certain people just have that to them. You know, there's amazing people there. There's amazing matches being performed, but it's, at the end of the day, it feels like a waste of time, in a way that it won't when it really is firing on all cylinders.
And I agree with you 100%. And I've said it for a while, that AEW has to start to build an audience more than just the, as you said, smart mark people. You have to build an audience. And I feel like they do things to hinder that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think some of that is it's just par for the course of doing anything new. Yeah. And some of that is just, you know, what your strategy is. You know, are you, because I what I think Vince McMahon was really good with is he would sacrifice moments that would really appeal to the deep wrestling fan, knowing that it would appeal more to the casuals or children or whatever. Like, he would kind of pick and choose pretty well, like, all right, I'm never going to lose like the real deep fans, so I can afford for them to be pissed off at me for a little bit, because it'll mean that I'll get 10,000, 100,000 more fans, maybe even a million fans worldwide that wouldn't have tuned in to begin with, and then will tune in for the rest of their lives. So he was good at making those choices. It sometimes led to a more frustrating product. And when I'm talking about choices, I'm talking about like match endings and types of matches and particular, you know, characters to, you know, focus on more or not focus on. Like, you kind of have to make those decisions for the longevity of it all. And that those kind of decisions are always going to piss the hardcore fans, because they feel like they deserve the highest quality product. And in their mind, the highest quality product is the one that appeals to them the most. You know, everybody has their own biases as audience members. So I would say I would like to see AEW, and I would like to see Tony Khan make more difficult decisions that will do better for the longevity of the whole thing.
Yep, it's a long game. It's not a short game, to use a sports analogy, if you
Absolutely.
Will. Absolutely. I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Cody for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, rarities, a great pool system, a friendly staff. They got it all. So, if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop on over by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is the website. And they're pretty darn active on the Facebook page. So just look for at WGComics. All right. Well, Cody, let's talk a little bit about Kill the Lion films. You have a couple of films that have been released already, and you're working on a new one. So let's talk about the one that you told me off air you're busy editing. Let's talk about Invisible Shark. Can you maybe give a summary without giving too much away?
Yeah, absolutely. I can give you an exclusive. I'll go into it a little bit more with you than I've gone into it anywhere else.
All right.
The story is it's basically about being able to see something that nobody else notices or can see. So this invisible shark is this entity that's causing destruction that only certain people even see. So everybody else thinks they're crazy, and they know that they're not crazy because other people are seeing the same phenomenon. And it's just the idea of a, you know, shark movie that takes on this existential level of this isn't something that everybody's perceiving. This is something that only a few people are perceiving. Now, that conceit has kind of been employed in a less literal way throughout horror and throughout thrillers and suspense forever. It's always some main character is noticing something and nobody else is noticing it or is ignoring it or whatever, and they're stuck with it. But with Invisible Shark, I'm taking a more literal approach of like, they're literally seeing something that nobody else can see, almost in an ESP level. So it's a movie about the phenomenon of noticing something that nobody else is noticing and how difficult that is and how much that wears on your psyche and your life and your livelihood in general. It's an exciting movie, and it's a really interesting movie, and it's fun, but that's really the core of it, is let's take the thing that horror has always been doing of like, hey, the killer's over there, let me grab somebody to show them that the killer's there, and then the killer's gone. Or hey, the body was over there, and let me grab somebody and show them the body's there, and the body's already gone because the killer moved it. Like, that kind of thing that always happens that doesn't really have a supernatural meaning necessarily, that like every single time nobody notices it. I'm taking that and just blowing it up to people are literally seeing shark kills and whatever that nobody else can see, because it's happening on a different plane of existence than our own reality, and they can key into it in a certain way. And it's just how those people are treated, how you would be treated in society. It's like a science fiction exploration of that.
Now, you mentioned that filming is done, correct? And you're in the editing stage?
Yeah, I'm well into post-production. I'm mostly focusing on audio right now. I think audio is, you know, extremely important. You know, people will tolerate your movie if, you know, it doesn't look so good or whatever, but if the audio is bad, it can really make it something that you don't even want to listen to. So mm-hmm. I put a lot of time and energy, probably the most time and energy when I'm doing a project is focused on audio and really making it sound as good as it possibly can.
When is the end date for the project to be finished and released and set to go for people to watch?
I'm trying to be done in February, and then it would be released probably March. So fairly soon. You know, I'm close to the end, but you know, the amount of effort it takes to bring something from like 98% completion to like 99% completion is like a lot of like, it just becomes a lot of work. Almost like in an RPG where like, the higher level you are, like the more it takes to get from like level 50 to level 51. Like maybe you're grinding for like weeks and months. But whereas like when you started playing it, going from like level 1 to level 2 was like one battle. That's kind of how it is in editing, where like the closer you get to the finish line, you'll be doing very minute and you'll be doing a lot of work just to get a movie from almost done to actually done.
So I'm going to ask about another movie that's in your catalog, No Shark, and we can talk about that for a minute. But is it is Invisible Shark a continuation of No Shark, or are these two separate universes, for lack of a better term?
It's definitely a continuation. I felt like the best way to kind of keep my existential shark trilogy series, I don't know what it'll be yet, but keep it going, is just follow it very linearly. And it's not a sequel per se, but people from No Shark show up in Invisible Shark, and it kind of continues an overall universe, I would say, almost in like a, you know, like a Kevin Smith way, where, you know, people show up in certain movies, but it's not, you wouldn't call it a series and you wouldn't call it sequels, but you'll see characters again. And you get a broader idea of the universe being presented. But it's definitely, it's a different type of movie. No Shark was more of an experimental film, because it's wall-to-wall narration and just shots. And you're just listening to essentially an audiobook while looking at visuals that coincide. So it has one toe in the literary world and one toe in cinema. Invisible Shark's just like a straight up movie. Like it's just a normal movie, like normal people watch. And so if anybody listening, No Shark is too out there for them, Invisible Shark is not going to be more of the same. It's I never try and make the same movie twice. I always try and shake things up a little bit.
Well, do you want to talk about a couple of your other films, Ramekin and Ramekin 2, which did I read there's a third one coming?
There is a third one coming.
Oh man. Okay.
This is something I wanted to do for a while, which is Ramekin 3, which would be in 3D. So it'd be Ramekin 3D. The full title is Ramekin 3, the Third Dimension, because it's a play on the fact that each movie is kind of its own dimension, literally, and third dimension, 3D, blah, blah, blah. So, I'm going to be shooting that. I'm plans to shoot it this spring or summer. I have the 3D camera that I'll be using. It will probably be the lowest budget 3D movie ever made, but it will be the one of the most enjoyable 3D movies ever. I'm my goal is to, like, you know, when you're watching a 3D movie and like some of the shots like just are lazy and don't take advantage of the 3D, and some of them are like really taking advantage of it. I'm trying to make a movie where every single shot takes advantage of the 3D aspect and really puts things into perspective in an interesting way. I don't want a single shot in the movie to not take advantage of being 3D.
You've put me on the hot seat here. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen a 3D movie.
Wow. Well, there aren't too many good ones, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really trying, because I never saw Jaws 3D.
Mm-hmm. That's not a good movie. Jaws 3 is look, I'm known for going to bat for Jaws 4. I think Jaws 4 is very underrated. Jaws 3, I will not go to bat for. Jaws 3 is not good.
I'm trying to think of other 3D movies that have come out. I don't think I've ever seen one, Cody.
You didn't see Avatar in 3D when that came out?
I did not.
Good for you. Look, I'm not an Avatar person. I know some people go crazy for it. I think a lot of the fun of 3D is going to be found in your more cheap, silly stuff. Like, I had way more fun with Final Destination 4 and My Bloody Valentine 3D when those came out around like 2008, 2009. I'm probably getting the time period wrong, but that kind of era of like 3D's back in theaters again, I had way more fun with those than I did with Avatar. You know, sitting through a 3-hour movie in 3D, you got to be really, really, really good to make that engaging. And I think it's probably even an impossible feat to accomplish. I don't think James Cameron's pulled it off. I don't think it's possible. So like Ramekin 3, it's going to be like 70 minutes. It's, you know, that to me is what a 3D movie should be. It's just be quick, easy, light on story, big on fun, that sort of thing.
Do you have any other projects coming up?
I mean, I always have stuff I'm working on. I'm always trying to figure out what the next thing will be. I do know I'll probably be making a lot of movies in 2023. So though I don't know what they'll be yet, it's like almost like it's so funny because like people, you know, audiences will assume that like you have things that you're hiding because you don't want to like spoil them or whatever. Like I can't talk about what I'm going to do in 2023 because I don't know which projects will be ready to be on the front burner versus the back burner. You know, like the universe will kind of choose which projects are ready and which projects need more time. And I can never really predict that. You know, you just kind of have to see what happens. And, you know, there'll always be something for me to make, though. I always have like 5 or 6 ideas swirling in my head as things I want to do in the next couple of years. And whichever ones are the right or have the right time lining up with them, then those will be the ones that I do first.
Okay. Well, let folks know where they can find your catalog, whether we're talking about Ramekin, Ramekin 2, Attack of the Giant Blurry Finger, No Shark, et cetera, et cetera. Where can folks check out your work?
Yeah, so pretty much all my movies are on YouTube for free. I believe very strongly in having a paid option, but also having a free option. Just like when you can go to a library and get, you know, a brand new book for free for a week or two. You know, I just think all art should have a free option and a paid option. So all my movies are on Amazon or whatever, but almost all my movies are on YouTube as well. So, you know, you don't have to pay to see my movies, but you can pay to see my movies. And I found that it doesn't hurt anything monetarily for me at all, because the people that enjoy movies better when they pay for them, they will go out of the way to pay for the movie. The people that want movies to be more like a library experience, they'll go on YouTube, they'll watch your movie. It's a different audience. You know, it's kind of like how books, some people like to buy books brand new, some people like to find books used, some people like to go to the library. They're not in competition because they're different people. They just have different patterns of engaging with the product. So people that are new to me, just go on YouTube, you know, click around, look at my feature films, youtube.com/CodyClark, see what you key into. They're all pretty different. And if you're somebody who wants to kind of make sure that they watch something, usually you want to pay like a couple bucks and on Amazon rent something for a day or two, you can go right on Amazon and watch all my movies on there. So It just depends on your viewing habits and what makes you enjoy something most.
Cool. All right, let's run down social media, website, and all that jazz before we run out of time, Cody. So where can folks find you on the internet?
Twitter, Cody Clark, YouTube, Cody Clark. That's all easy. Instagram, Kill the Lion, which is Kill the Lion Films, my studio. And yeah, people can, you know, always check out my stuff, reach out to me, let me know what you think or what brought you to it. And yeah, I'm always down to engage with people. So I'm on there.
And speaking of that engagement, I think later on this year we need to revisit, or we need to visit each other again here and find out about all your projects and talk some more wrestling. If you're good with that, we'll make that happen sometime here, maybe towards the middle to the end of the year. What do you say?
Sounds good to me. Always
awesome. Awesome. Cody, thank you very much, man, for taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with me.
Absolutely. Look, it's always a pleasure. I consider this place a very hospitable place to be, and I always have fun talking to you.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I will be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Cody Clark, talking about his fandom of wrestling and his movie projects, both past and present. And I want to thank Cody for coming on and spending some time chatting with me. And I look forward to having him back on in the future to talk about wrestling, movies, or heck, whatever we can come up with. So this is the part of the show where I need to let you know how you can get in touch with me if you have a question or comment about this episode, or any episode for that matter. Well, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds of this podcast. Just look for @PVDcast. And you can email me, although I must confess, over the last week or so, my email has been so screwed up that I'm having problems accessing my messages and my mail. You know what? Heck with it. Let's just throw it out there anyways. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is my email address, and hopefully I'll get it straightened out here. I don't know what the problem is. You know, sometimes it's a simple fix and sometimes it's not. I'll keep you updated on the status of my email dilemma. But yes, there you go. You can email me. You can touch base with me on Twitter or on Facebook and Instagram. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about this great podcast. Well, there's a couple different ways you can do that. First of all, you can tell them to go over to PVDcast.com, which is the online home of yours truly, where all of the episodes live, both past and present. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets or apps. So all you got to do is use your favorite app, go to the search bar, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. And there's even an easier way to get every single weekly episode, and that's through the Facebook page. Every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a little Facebook broadcast for you where you can check out the episode. You can even drop some comments there, and I'll respond because I monitor the feed. It's a whole lot of fun, so you definitely need to check it out. Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at PVDcast, of course, is the Facebook address. And there you go. Three very easy ways to check out this podcast. But if you do check out this podcast, I need a favor from you. If you're listening through one of those major podcasting outlets, please rate and review, and of course, subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm, and it's super important for me to see where I'm going, if I'm going up the ranks or if I'm going down the ranks. And it's also important for those outlets, so they get data to know who is listening and where and whatnot. And of course, subscribing means you never miss an episode of this podcast. And if you're tuning in on Facebook for the Facebook broadcast, please like those videos, all right? That helps me out as well. In fact, if I may be so bold, like all my posts on the PVDcast Facebook page. I'm just saying, they're all great. Anyways. Also, retweet me. What's wrong, people? Let's get on this. Retweet me on Twitter. Okay. My resolution for 2023 is to badger you all into helping me out with my social media. Anyways, all right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm getting a little bit silly here, so let's wrap this up. Thank you once again for checking out the episode. I really do appreciate it. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.